Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, December 30th. I'm Ray Graff. This afternoon, it's all about physical therapy. We welcome back Matthew Goodemote. He is here to answer your questions. If you have an injured back or a knee, a shoulder, an elbow, whatever, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You may also reach out via email if you wish. voxpop@wamc.org. That's the email address. And again, the number is 800-348-2551. Physical therapy. Matthew Goodemote. At your calls, coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, our live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is Matthew Goodemote, a highly respected orthopedic physical therapist with over 25 years' experience. He specializes in treating back and neck pain and sports injuries and has worked with a diverse range of athletes, including pros, Olympians, Division I and All-American athletes, triathletes, elite runners, and dedicated weekend warriors. He holds a diploma from the McKenzie Institute, Titleist Performance Institute certifications in golf performance, and a certification in applied functional sciences. He's also the founder of Goodemote Sports and Performance, where he works with active individuals and collaborates with local high schools to establish strength and conditioning programs designed to optimize athletic performance and reduce injury risk. Number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 if you have a physical therapy question, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Matthew Goodemote, welcome back. How are
Thank
you, buddy?
Thank you, Ray. I'm doing well. Very well.
Happy holidays. What's happening?
You too. Oh, just enjoying time with my family right now. Both my kids are home from college, so I get to spend time with them.
Ah, nice. Good. The brief amount of time that they're actually there.
Yes.
Yeah.
My son's going to be here for a while. He spends his last semester in Australia, so he's going to be here to February.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Put him to work.
Yeah.
Make him good luck
with that.
Make him shovel the driveway.
Yeah. He's doing the dishes.
Good for you. I wish I could do that. The number here is 800-348-2551. In my house, the kids rule. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
They outnumber us. This email from Dawn came in quite early this morning. In 2022, Matt was very helpful with his suggestion that I practice cervical retraction for trapezius muscle spasm. The spasms returned 9 months ago, and I've tried everything I can to cure them. Recent x-rays show generally the same degree of severe bilateral C3, 4, C4, C5, C7, T1 facet arthropathy as in 2022. I have completed several rounds of PT. I do the exercises faithfully at home. Spasms occur randomly several times a week. They're very painful, leave me extremely sore for hours. I was referred to a neurologist, whom I will see in a few weeks. Just wondering if you have had experience treating this and any thoughts. I'm 81 years old, was very active, but this really has made daily living difficult, and that's from Dawn.
Yeah, so the retraction is the safe exercise, and it's very effective often. The intermittent spasms, I would really try to zero in on when they're happening, and often we think they're out of the blue, but it could be that they're followed by or preceded by some activity or inactivity. So if you sit for a while, you can get a spasm, or you did some type of normal activity. So I'd really try to zero in and see if there is an actual source to them. And then my approach is always the same. I start with range of motion screens. So if the joints are free, which means you can bend, you can extend, you can rotate, and there's no limitations, then I would actually start looking further down into the thoracic spine and the muscles around the upper back.
Uh-huh.
I find manual therapy to be very effective, so I use that quite a bit. And so sometimes it's just a matter of doing some joint mobilizations to the neck or some soft tissue work to the trapezius muscles.
We're joined today by Matthew Goodemote. It's physical therapy on the program, 800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. You know, you're on it winter time at least once a year. Mm-hmm. Every year I ask you, what's the best way to shovel that won't throw us our backs and shoulders and everything else out?
It's to get your son, Ray. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, well, good. Right. He's more elusive than Bigfoot, all right?
The best way is to try to maintain a neutral spine, which basically means your natural position of spine. Oftentimes, people will shovel just to the same side. So they'll just, if they're right-handed, they'll just go always to their left. So you'd want to switch that up and make sure you're going to both sides. Also, making sure you're not carrying the huge, heavy, wet snow and trying to finish it too quickly, because that can also lead to complications with the back.
I mean, do you recommend just pushing the snow? I have one of those kind of wide, low shovels that just pushes snow. I always like that best.
Yeah, I tend to push, and then I just take little scoops myself and push it up into the bank. Yep.
The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Matt Goodemo today, and it's physical therapy. And the email is voxpop@wamc.org. Nick writes in, when running, sometimes a stitch in the abdomen will stop me cold for a bit. What causes this? Mm. How do people prevent it or stop it?
I don't remember what causes it. Sometimes I think it's a lack of oxygen, so making sure the breath is proper. I used to think it was dehydration or lack of fluids, but I don't think that's been disproven.
What's a stitch?
A cramp in your belly. Yeah. I think it's the diaphragm, which means breathing related. I don't get them anymore. I remember getting them when I was younger. I can't think what it is, right? I think it's oxygen related, which would mean improper breathing. So taking shallow breaths to the upper instead of the deep diaphragmatic breath. So perhaps just making sure the breath work is, effective.
All right. Remember to breathe, Nick. Nick goes on, when stationary or lying down, sometimes a cramp or Charlie horse will happen. I know, drink more water, but why do I get that feeling and what do I do about it?
So cramping is a little bit different than the stitch in the belly. So if let's say it's a cramp in the calf, for example, the tendency is to want to stretch it, which is an effective way. It's just a painful way. I tend to shorten muscles that are spasming. So if you can go with the movement, it can sometimes help to release it. And then, of course, the prevention is the best medicine. When prevention would keep the tissue mobile and keep it strong. So the two things I would recommend are foam rolling type of activities before running, and then a lot of calf strengthening if it's in the calf. If it's a hamstring, it's similar. It's strength. Most of the time, the answer is going to be strength for those type of cramping type of things.
All right. Jay writes in, forearm/shoulder connection. I know I have tears in one or both of my right bicep tendons for over a year now. I've tried recently to stretch out my shoulder, which is very tight. Mm-hmm. It seemed to aggravate my bicep tendon that had been feeling better. Is there a reason or connection between the shoulder and forearm? Should I have my shoulder looked at to help the bicep tendon?
So there's a little bit of a trick answer here, because if you're having symptoms in the forearm and you're also having symptoms in the upper arm, I think neck. So some of the reason, the nerve runs down through, the radial nerve runs right down through there. So I would start with screening the neck, doing range of motion assessments, making sure there's no connection there. The bicep tendon, there's, as you said, two tendons, and they attach in the shoulder area. And sometimes it's posture related, because the shoulder joint, your posture's forward, so that bicep tendon is holding the shoulder, the ball in the socket, holding it in place.
Right.
And it's not meant to do that. And it will refer down the entire length of the bicep, which goes into the forearm. So, but it's the upper forearm right below the crease in the arm. So depending on where the symptoms are in the forearm would tell me which way to go with it, if it's a neck or shoulder area. And stretching is probably not the best solution. It's if number one, proper posture, if it happens to be with poor posture, and then strengthening. So it's getting into the stronger.
The password is strengthening.
Yeah,
Matthew Goodemo is our guest today. It's physical therapy, 800-348-2551 or voxpop@wamc.org. Tell you what, let's grab one call before our first break, and let's go to New Paltz and David. David, you're on.
Matthew, how are you today?
Good.
I have a question. I'm an 84-year-old guy. I have edema in my legs. Mm-hmm. And my GP, my doctor, gave me an electrocardiogram and ruled out the heart.
Oh.
And he did a blood test and all that. And he said, prescribed walking 30 minutes to a day, and cutting out salt. Mm-hmm. And with the winter weather, you know, I haven't been able to get out there and walk. I've been doing walking in the house.
Yeah.
And my Dr. Tooman actually said that I should wear a stretch support stock, stockings up to the knee.
Yes.
What do you suggest?
Compression, 100%. So compression socks are highly effective for keeping circulation and helping to minimize the edema, especially in the lower leg. Obviously, the walking is a big part, but just around the house, getting up, and I would recommend not only getting up, but trying to even set a timer perhaps so that about every hour you're getting up, walking around and changing your position. And then avoiding having the feet flat on the ground. So if you have a recliner, using the recliner with your feet propped up. If you don't have a recliner, sit in a couch and have your feet on a coffee table. So keeping the blood moving is the key to minimizing or preventing edema. And if it's still really backing up, then you can do some elevation, which would be you laying on your couch and prop your legs up on an armrest type of thing.
David.
And walking wouldn't hurt it? Or
oh, no, no, no. Activity is good for it. So you want to walk, you want to ride a bike, you want to get up and move around. If it's too unsafe outside, going to a grocery store and doing laps in there, or I think they still do mall walking, so places
doing
like
laps
that.
In a grocery store. That's a costly experience, let me tell you.
You can stop and have a snack occasionally,
yeah,
too.
Right.
No, no, no. Yeah. So that's the recommendation. Movement is good, and compression is definite.
All right, David, we got to take a break here, but thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Physical Therapy Today. Matthew Goodemo joins us. We'll be back with more calls and emails coming up. Quincy Jones here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. It's Physical Therapy Today. I'm Ray Graff. We're joined by Matthew Goodemote, an orthopedic physical therapist. If you have a question, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, or you can call 800-348-2551. Kate wrote in, I'm 68 with meniscus tears. My doctor said he'll try gel, but I'm looking at knee replacement. I walk 5 miles, but I miss running. Would PT be useful? I was not given that option. Would compression socks make a difference?
So PT, 100%. There's more and more research saying, depending on the type of tear, I should have said that first. Depending on the type of meniscal tear, if it's a degenerative type of tearing, then 100% physical therapy is very effective.
What do you mean? There are different kinds?
Yeah. So you can have different tears. There's a posterior horn tear. It's in the back part of the meniscus. A bucket handle tear where it flips over. Those are tears that don't generally respond to physical therapy. I would still try. But in my experience, it's a small percentage that do well with that.
Okay.
But if you have degenerative tearing or fraying of the meniscus, that does incredibly well with physical therapy and can absolutely, you can definitely benefit from physical therapy with strengthening specifically.
So the physical therapy will not repair
change
your
meniscus.
The tears.
No,
so
correct.
So what are you doing then?
So the knee joint gets its nutrition through movement. So any type of exercise is going to help to keep the cartilage healthy and maintain the status quo at its very minimum. And the strength, the stronger your muscles are, especially in the leg, they start to absorb the forces, so it actually reduces the pressure through the knee joint. So 100% strengthening and specific exercises in the hip, pelvis, core area, and then the thigh muscles, even the calf, so the whole leg.
All right.
And as far as compression socks, I'm just a fan of compression, so they're not going to harm anything. They won't do a whole lot for meniscus. I've treated dozens and dozens of people with meniscal tears, and strengthening has been very beneficial.
All right, let's go back to our phones with Matthew Goodemo today. It's Physical Therapy, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Don, who is apparently in Binghamton. Where are you, Don?
Hey, how are you? I am between Albany and Binghamton.
All right. Hey, drive safely. You on I-88 right now?
I am. Oh. Trying to avoid the snow.
Be careful, man. All right, okay. What do you got?
So, 59, you know, 9 years ago, I ran the Boston Marathon. I was in great shape until about 3-4 years ago. And I started, you know, I'm on my feet when I work, and I started working too much because my legs were a little tired. I stopped working out my lower body. You know, I stopped running 5-6 miles. I didn't run for about a year and a half. And my knees started hurting me, both of them. And I thought, well, if my knees are hurting me, I probably shouldn't run. I just went to the doctors, and they basically told me my leg muscles have atrophied, and my BMO, I think it's called, which is kind of the teardrop muscle just above the knee.
Yep.
That has atrophied so much that it's almost on one of my legs, my weaker right leg, it's not even there. So I'm told I have to build that all up again.
Yes.
I mean, there are times I'm limping, and again, I ran the marathon. 4 years ago, I was running 6 miles every other day.
Yeah.
Now I don't think I can run up the stairs.
Right.
How long is it going to take to build up these muscles again? Again, I'm doing teardrops on a leg extension.
Yeah.
I'm just started step ups. I was on a step machine the other day. Today I'm going to the gym and going to do a bike for hopefully half an hour.
Yeah.
But my knees are, my right one especially, very, very sore on the inside.
Yeah.
Of the knee. And
so,
I'm told it's due to this atrophy of the BMO muscle.
Yep. So Don, it's a little bit more than what you're talking about to build up the muscle. So to get actual size back and to get strength back, you have to lift weights. So the knee extension machine is one possible exercise that could help, but it's other exercises like squats and lunges and doing it loaded, meaning with weights, and they have to be progressive. So if you're not progressing the load, you won't gain strength back. You'll have a little bit of improvement early on, and then it will just be maintaining. So it's really, I think it'd be appropriate to get help with this, to get somebody to teach you a program that you can do 3 to 5 days a week to actually build the strength back.
Okay, so that's what doing it loaded means. I understand now. Well, we lost Don somewhere through there, but I hope you heard the answer on the radio.
Yeah.
Let's go to Schenectady and our buddy Joan. Number's 800-348-2551. Hello, Joan in Schenectady. How are you?
Hello, Ray. You knew I couldn't resist before the New Year's.
I knew it. All right, go ahead.
And doing exercises loaded is not quite my question.
I don't think he meant that.
Okay, cool.
The first thing that went through my head, but that's not it.
And hello, Dr. Goodman.
Hello.
I think you can help me. I'm in an aging body, just starting, 65,
mm-hmm.
and some of the things that I conquered earlier in my life are reminding me of their presence.
Mm-hmm.
So the legs are doing good, you know, kind of moved my kneecap around 1 year, but all better now.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the pain has transferred to the opposite side, like below the shoulder, the lower, mm-hmm. I want to say the lower scapula. Is that the back
yep.
part? Whatever.
Yep.
Is there a gentle thing that I can do to keep my upper body moving since I've apparently spent too much time getting my lower body better?
Yes. So the mid-back area, mid and upper back, is often related to the spine. So the first part would be mm-hmm. to make sure you have a mobile spine. And posture mm-hmm. is, of course, very important. And then when it comes to the upper body, the strengthening, you would want to strengthen your upper back muscles. And those are exercises like lat pull-downs and rows. So it's movements where your elbows are moving backwards towards going behind you, pulling-type movements. I'm a general fan of any type of upper body exercise. So pushing is fine, too. Doing things, if you have access to a gym, to use the machines or to get help and learn how to do free weights would also be beneficial. At home, there's quite a bit you can do just using bands that you can get at, you know, a Dick's or on Amazon or whatever. And you can do those mm-hmm. same type of exercises from home. And those would be the beneficial exercises for the upper back and specifically your scapula or shoulder blades.
All right.
Well, this sounds good. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Joan, Happy New Year, and thanks for the call. By the way, to make it clear, Matthew, you're not a doctor, right?
I am not. I have a master's.
Do you play one on radio at all?
Yeah.
No, you're not a doctor.
No.
All right. This email from Kay in Berkshire County. My 32-year-old son has long Lyme disease. Mm. His hands, arms, and legs shake when he places pressure on them. For example, he cannot squat without his legs shaking, could not play Twister with his 7-year-old nephews on Christmas. What exercise regimen might be best for regaining the strength?
That's a tricky question. Lyme can be devastating to the body, obviously. And general exercise would be, I'd recommend things like yoga would be a good starting point that's generally safe. And you can do a whole bunch of different type of exercises to improve mobility and strength. I don't know any reason he couldn't get into a weight room either, though. Because of the Lyme, he would want to have some guidance. Physical therapy is always a good starting point. We make sure technique is done properly, and then he can progress that into a weight room if he wanted. You can do all the same type of things at home, so it's body weight exercises. And there's really not any restriction per se of exercise he couldn't do. It's more to make sure that he's doing the technique properly and then teach him how to progress it safely.
Yeah, that's interesting. As the founder of Good Emote Sports and Performance, you work with kids a lot on this. And I assume one of these things is getting the proper technique when you're
so
working
out. Yeah.
And what are the, what's the most common mistake people make when they start out?
So for the lower body, there's things we call hinge, which is what you do a deadlift with. And teaching someone who doesn't know how to hinge is very challenging at times. So that it just requires keeping your spine straight. And a lot of people struggle to recognize where their back is. It's a thing called proprioception. So they'll flex, they'll bend forward instead of keeping the spine straight. With squats, people let their knees come together. That's the number one mistake. Or they'll round their back when they're squatting. So those are the big areas I saw for the lower body. For the upper body, it's keeping the wrist in the right position, doing like a bench press, learning how to do a pull-up with not just your arms, but actually using your back muscles, those type of things. So
It might be tough to quantify, but when a kid, an athlete, student athlete, high schooler, is doing it wrong, is there more, is the detriment more that you're not getting as strong as you can be or that you are harming something?
The potential for injury exists if you have poor technique, and it is difficult to progress to your maximum ability with poor technique. So using the bench press as an example, kids will have their wrist extended all the way. So the ideal position is like if you're a boxer, you want to have a strong wrist.
Straight.
Yeah, straight, exactly. And so you do the same thing with a bench press. And if you don't, you can't load the bar heavy because it'll put too much pressure and hurt your wrist.
Right.
So something like that, that's where technique is. It doesn't seem like a big deal when you're starting out. And lots of people use really lousy technique and can lift the bar. But as you're progressing, you'll eventually get to a cap where you can't do it properly.
We're joined today by Matthew Good Emote, a physical therapist. If you have a physical therapy question, feel free, 800-348-2551 or email voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll check the email bag again in a little bit. Ted's in Shelburne, Vermont. Hello, friend Ted.
Hello.
Hello.
All you great guys at WAMC. And I have a specific because I have asymmetrical. My right calf is, especially in the morning, looking smaller than the left one. And there was experience around 4 years or so ago of deep vein thrombosis with clots in that part of my body as well as my chest, which had a few days of adventure. But I've been doing well. And I just a month or so ago, I noticed this, especially in the morning getting up. I said, whoa, that's not equal.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that even though I'm okay on stairs and things like that, that the left is better than the right.
Yeah.
And I now do have a physical therapy referral, which I haven't followed through with yet. Mm. And it's described as muscle weakness M62.81. I don't know if that means anything to you, but I've described the situation. That bring anything to your mind?
Yeah, so the atrophy is likely what's causing the weakness that you're experiencing with the difference on the stairs. And going to PT is a great step because they'll be able to isolate out which muscle or muscles is atrophied or weak. And the good news is that the body is very good at building strength back. So getting hypertrophy as we get older, hypertrophy means the muscles getting bigger. That's harder to do as we get older, but getting stronger is not. So you can do a lot with strength.
There is 86 involved with my age.
So getting real hypertrophy back would take a lot and probably not worth it. But the key to getting stronger is to do strengthening exercises and specifically heavy type strengthening exercise because the calf muscle takes a lot of force when we're doing things like walking and doing stairs. So the PTs will definitely be able to show you good exercises that you can do. And just remember that once you get the program, the key with improving is to progress, which means doing more repetition and eventually doing more weights and things like that. So
increase, and then this will be focusing on a little more for the right.
Correct. Yeah. And ideally, you will be doing exercises just with the right leg so that it really helps to improve just the right leg. But a lot
Let
of times
people catch up and
Yeah, but we do both legs also because nervous system-wise, your brain will figure things out. So if you do a lot on the left leg, it will actually help the right leg, believe it or not, neurologically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right, Ted.
I thank you very much, and I will get my appointment going and get physical with this thing with a local professional and discipline myself. Thank you very much.
Hey, you're Ted, welcome. Thanks a lot. Happy New Year. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Matthew Goodemo today. It's physical therapy, and he braved some lousy driving to get here, so thanks again. Let's go to Lee in Clifton Park. Lee, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about my daughter. She is 36 at the moment, but about 15 years ago, well, I should say, she has scoliosis, and in the last decade or so, realized and has been diagnosed with EDS, or Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, the milder kind, if one can put it that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect her blood vessels, but it does affect her joints. So in her early 20s, she dislocated her jaw sleeping a funny way and has since had, obviously, you know, problems. Her TMJ issues been problematic. She sees a chiropractor at least once a week, if not twice, for her neck issues. Yeah. And I think that helps indirectly with her jaw issues.
Yep.
But I believe that there's also sort of a musculoskeletal factor there that she could address.
Yeah.
So I was just hoping to get your thoughts about that.
So there's zero doubt about that. So when you have any type of TMJ-related issues, there's not just the work on the neck, which is a very important thing to do because they're often connected, but there's specific work for the jaw itself. It's a joint. And so as a joint, it's going to respond to movement and it's going to respond to strengthening exercises. And there are physical therapists who specialize in TMJ in the area, in Clifton Park, and they would be able to provide a program that she can be doing on a regular basis. So going to get adjustments and doing therapy or chiropractic, it's good to have that intervention, but this type of thing needs daily routine.
Ah.
And that's going to be also just for her condition. The EDF, the more she gets into a regular routine of strengthening type of exercises, the more beneficial they'll be. So I do think it's good to have help from professionals because they can alleviate symptoms and they can help get the kickstarting, but it's something that is going to be very important for her to do on a regular basis, I would say daily, if not certainly weekly.
And very quickly, a physical therapist who specializes in TMJ issues,
yep.
Can we be confident that that individual would also be knowledgeable about EDS?
Yes. Yes. So I know the therapist, and I know he's knowledgeable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I can't say on air, but I could if you wanted to. Yeah. So there's a way to do this, and I can, I can.
All right. Fair enough. Lee, thanks a lot for the call. Let's grab one more before the next break. It's Physical Therapy Today with Matthew Goodemote. It's 800-348-2551 if you want to join in, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And we'll check the email bag after the next break. Let's go to Campbell Hall and talk to Renee. Hi, Renee. How's the weather out there today?
It's windy and cold.
Yuck. All right.
Yeah,
you're on the
windy.
Air. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. Just a quick question. I've been to PT a number of times in my area here in Orange County, and it seems that they don't always review the radiologist's report from an MRI. They do a physical exam, a strength kind of exam.
Yeah.
I've always thought that it would be really important that they read the radiologist's report, or is that something that you don't have to do?
So I'm just going to share my own personal bias with this. So there's lots of PTs out there who do. But oftentimes, the best way to go about getting a clinical diagnosis for the physical therapist in particular is to do that examination, because a radiology test, an X-ray or MRI, is meant to confirm or deny what you're seeing in the clinic. So often for me, I don't read a doctor's report and I don't read an MRI report before I talk to the patient. I don't want to be biased when I'm looking, I'm talking to the person. So once I have established what I think it is, then I would go to an MRI report or an X-ray report to see to confirm or deny it. So the reason, so my point is that oftentimes a therapist wants to get a clear view of what's going on. And then the X-ray or MRI isn't a good diagnostic tool because there's so many times where there's false positives and false negatives. For example, in the lumbar spine, 70% of all people have a herniated disc who are asymptomatic. So if you, just because you have a herniated disc does not correlate with, oh, I have, that's what's causing my back pain. And too many times we blame the back pain on the MRI or X-ray. And meanwhile, the clinical presentation is not saying anything about a herniated disc. So they're very useful, very, very important, a huge part of medical and diagnostics. But a lot of times PTs want to just have that relationship with the patient and do their own questions first.
Renee.
Oh, are there specific physical tests
yes.
that all PTs know to
yes.
do in order to isolate the problem?
Correct. Yes, we have extensive training in that. That's one of the biggest things that we do as part of our curriculum is we have training in all the different areas of physical therapy, and they're very comprehensive and very thorough examinations. So do physicians, by the way. So it's not that they don't, but physical therapists we have, that's exactly what our training is for.
All right, Renee, we got to leave it there and take a break. We're overdue. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. It's physical therapy. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Space Jelly by Todd Nelson on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ray Graff here. Matthew Goodemote across the table. He is a physical therapist, and the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's grab a few emails before we go back to the phones. Frank writes in, back in the old days, there was no such thing as exercise without stretching first.
Mm-hmm.
Every gym teacher I've ever had taught us how to do all kinds of stretches before physical activity. Today, though, some experts are saying that stretching isn't necessary. Mm-hmm. What's going on? Has the science changed? Is this another RFK Jr. conspiracy theory? Wasn't my gym teacher correct about stretching first to mm-hmm. prevent injury? Well, Frank, I think that Matthew is going to have an interesting answer.
Yes. So there is no data to support that stretching before activity prevents injury. There was a study just done, a meta-analysis, where they looked at all the benefits of stretching over all the research for the last 50-plus years. And there's three major primary things that stretching benefits. One is if you have a loss of motion from injury, you can restore it through stretching. Two is it's good for relaxation purposes. And three, it benefits cardiovascular function.
Okay.
So it does not prevent injury.
All right.
So, and I really, like, as far as warming up, I do think it's beneficial. My son is in school right now studying sports sciences, and they have discussions about there's no real data to support that that actually helps either, but that's a controversial topic, so we'll look into that for future.
Geez,
so.
You bring it up every show. How can, you know, I don't think you should be hiding now.
Stretching is not. So I do dynamic warm-ups, and what I recommend for people to do is to prep the body before activity. But long-sustained stretching doesn't have the benefits that people think and could, in my opinion, be counterproductive.
Yeah, all right. This is from Allison in Elizaville. I moved my mom's artificial tree at Thanksgiving. And I've had pain in my left mid-rib section since. What did I do, and is it fixable?
So a lifting-type injury is often either, A, a muscle strain, or can be related to the discs in the back or joints in the back. And, yes, it's fixable, and, yes, it usually resolves fairly quickly. The mid-back tends to get better very quickly. Something very simple to try is just laying flat on the belly, propped up on the elbows, and to see if that helps to alleviate the symptoms.
I'll tell you, I was raking leaves this autumn, and I was raking both sides, different times. I ended up with this pain right about where Allison was talking about. And it took about 3 weeks to dissipate on its own. Yeah.
Yeah.
It came and went.
Okay.
Like if I laughed very hard, it would appear.
Yeah.
And then,
But that's thoracic spine most likely, because when you do sharp breathing, either straining, sneezing, coughing, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm fine now.
Yeah.
You know what? I just try not to laugh.
Yes.
Cheryl writes in, I've had a diagnosis of tendonitis of my ankle since mid-November. I still have some swelling and pain, but it's slowly getting better. I believe I should have physical therapy to regain range of motion, as it is feeling a bit more stiff the longer this goes.
Yeah.
I'm able to do ankle pumps up and down, but inward motion still hurts. Are there any movements I could gently begin until the next doctor appointment in a few weeks? The doctor did not prescribe PT, which I think would have been helpful, now it is stiff and less mobile. Yeah. That is from Cheryl.
Yeah, so a tendonitis getting to the point of actual inflammation, I would go with compression for sure. And they have little compression sleeves you can get at grocery store, pharmacies, sticks, any place like that. So I would start there, because the swelling is going to inhibit the function of the tendon. And there's tons of exercises. So the ankle pumps is very low level and basic. Things like calf raises, where you raise up on your toes, would be beneficial. And this is a very, very important part. Tendons love exercise. They don't like rest. So doing something is very important. I also would recommend just something basic, like standing on one foot and balancing.
Huh.
It works all the muscles of the foot and lower leg, and it's very low level, so not likely to cause any irritation.
Somebody writes in, PT for hip arthritis, can it help me avoid surgery?
Well, that's a trick question. Depends on how bad the arthritis is. I'm an advocate of trying it, though, because the worst case scenario is it didn't work, and then you have to head towards surgery anyways.
Yeah.
But there's a ton of things you can do with an arthritic hip, from range of motion to strength. And as you get more mobility and strength, oftentimes it will, at very least, postpone that process.
Rebecca writes in, how do you know when to up the weight in exercise? Lunges, presses, squats, whatever.
So progressive doesn't necessarily mean weights. It does. That's one progression. Another progression is reps. So if you're able to do 10 to 12 repetitions, let's say you did three sets of 10 repetitions, it is definitely safe to progress then and add light weight. So you could go from 5 pounds to 7 pounds, or 5 pounds to 10 pounds. If you can't do all 10 reps, that's okay. Go back and just work your way back up to 10. So 10 to 12 reps is pretty safe indication that you could handle a little bit more weight and progress that accordingly.
All right. Ellen writes in, can stair climbing for 2 to 3 minutes repeated 3 times with 2 minutes in between substitute for other calf work?
No.
No.
So, I mean, it's a good exercise. That type of work is using the whole lower extremity, but to get the calf muscles themselves, there's a bunch of different ways to strengthen the calf and foot. So substitute is a strong word, I guess. That's why I said no. Is it beneficial to do? Absolutely. Do I recommend it? 100%. But I'm a big fan of progressing strength, and the calf muscles are very, very strong muscles. They take 70% of your body weight when you're – actually, I just read something today, 400% more going downstairs through the legs.
Really?
It's a lot of work for the calf and the knee. So I just think that people are often worried about adding weights because they were told in the 1980s we should do high reps, low weight. It is definitely safe to progress the weights, especially with the legs, with the calves.
Isn't it funny about advice like this?
it's going to change.
40 years ago was one thing. What's it going to be in 20 more years?
Yeah. I don't know, Ray.
You're going to have to come on and recant all of your...
Exactly. Stretching is good for you.
All right. Last email for now, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from I don't know who. I have bilateral sciatica sacroiliac pain. I think there's a misspelling there. Either that or I can't read. numbness down my right leg. I've been going to PT for about 3 months. It seems to help a little. But can I hope for a cure? I'm pretty good about doing my exercise, by the way. Mm-hmm. MRI did show some spinal stenosis and moderate disc herniations, of course. Mm-hmm. I get around okay. I go to the gym twice a week. I'm really tired of constant pain.
If it's truly constant pain, that usually indicates an inflammation, and sometimes medicine is necessary to help control the inflammation.
Yeah.
There's a lot of indications that persisting with sciatica, any back-related issues, is beneficial and can lead to a full recovery. The problem with sciatica is when you involve the nerve, it does take longer. So it's not uncommon for it to take months to recover, but persistence, especially if you're getting some relief with therapy, that's a strong indication to keep doing it and to keep going.
All right, let's go back to our phone lines with Matthew Goodemote. Let's go to Greenwood Lake. Lara, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good, welcome.
Right, thank you for taking my call. So in October, I was diagnosed with plantar fasciitis from running. My podiatrist has made me orthotics, which I wear religiously, and I have stretches that she gave me as well. She said I could start gradually running and walking. I really want to get back into it, but I want your opinion on how soon you think I can start running again.
Do you still have symptoms?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So it's a little bit tricky. The return to run progression is often best done when the symptoms have gone away. So if you still have some mild symptoms, then the work still needs to be done. Stretching for plantar fasciitis. So plantar fasciitis, we once thought was an inflammatory condition. We now think it's more degenerative and little minor tears, and it requires strength. You have to do strengthening exercises for the foot and calf. And when I say have to, I strongly say have to. It's the best way to recover from plantar fasciitis. Stretching, not so much. If you like it and it feels good after, great, but it's not one of those things that's going to do a whole heck of a lot. The orthotics are very important in the short term. Long-term use of orthotics could lead to other issues, but that's not for now to talk about. So the return to running program would be something really minor, like you would walk, let's say, for 2 minutes and try jogging for literally 30 seconds and do that, followed by 2 minutes of walking, 30 seconds of jogging, and see how the foot handles it. And what you're looking for is if the pain increases while you're doing it, do not keep doing it. So if the foot feels about the same, and then when you stop, it goes right back to where you started, you're safe, carry on, do another round of that. I always recommended two consecutive rounds of the exact same routine before progressing. And your progression would be 2 minutes of walking to 45 seconds or a minute of running followed by 2 minutes of walking. And when that doesn't bother you after two sessions, then a minute and a half of running, 2 minutes of walking, until you get 2 minutes of walking, 2 minutes of running, and then you start to reverse it, take shorter rest periods. And it will take literally weeks to get back.
It'll take weeks.
Weeks, yeah.
All right. Yep. Well, hang in there,
Thank
Lara.
Thank you.
Thanks for the
You're
call.
Welcome.
800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is our guest to Clifton Park. And Ravi. Ravi, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. This is regarding my son. He had a labrum tear in his left shoulder a few years back, and he had surgery to get it repaired. During the recovery phase, he was kind of, you know, doing his exercises in the gym on the right side. And now he feels that as if there is a muscle imbalance in his back, and his body feels a little rotated. He did PT for 5-6 months now, corrected. It has improved a little bit, but it hasn't really completely gone. Is there something that he needs to do specifically to address it? He feels that when he does exercises, one side loads a lot more than the other. In fact, some muscles on the right side just doesn't fire at all.
Yeah.
So is it something common? I don't know how to diagnose this and how to fix it for us.
So the imbalances is fairly common after any type of shoulder surgery. So the recovery for that, for a labrum repair, can take up to 6 months to get back, depending on the nature of the weakness he's leading into it with his therapy. So it's not uncommon for it to take this long. The muscle imbalances should be starting to equalize, meaning the therapist he's working with should be able to identify which muscle groups are inhibited compared to the other side and give very specific exercises to address them. And so sometimes it's a coordination thing where his brain and his muscles haven't coordinated quite yet, and they're still trying to figure out, and as soon as they do, the significant changes will start to happen. So again, it's a little bit he's pushing the envelope as far as how long it can take, but most PTs would be able to identify which muscle groups are weaker than the others and give very targeted specific exercises for that.
Robbie.
I see. Okay, so a quick follow-up. When he does workouts now, should he do it as if he's doing it for both sides, or should he try to concentrate a bit more on one side than the other?
It's a little bit of both. So oftentimes the rehab, the therapy exercises can be done as part of a warm-up. And then when he's doing the exercises, he's definitely welcome to use both sides. But if depending on the nature of the weakness, where it is, will dictate which exercises are okay in the weight room. And so it's a difficult question to ask without knowing specifically where his weaknesses are, but there's things that he can definitely do that is for both arms at the same time. And there's also exercise you're doing for his specific areas of weakness.
All right, Robbie, thanks a lot for the call. This email from Mary, who says, as a menopausal woman, we're told that we need to do weight-bearing activities. I'm confused as to whether or not walking, recomp, cycling, swimming, or Tai Chi-type activities count as weight-bearing, or are those just aerobic? Are they referring to actual weights that you use in the gym? And that is from Mary in Wilbraham.
That's a great question. So the weight-bearing means against gravity. So doing recumbent bike is not a lot of work on the spine or hips, and nor is swimming. So walking 100%, and you can do things like getting a weight vest to increase the weight that you're having, so going against gravity. But there are specific programs for women who are menopausal, postmenopausal, that are for strengthening the spine, hips, pelvis area, yeah. And they would be very, very beneficial to learn those. But to answer your question directly, what they mean with weight bearing is against gravity. So, okay. Again, the water is not against gravity, so that is not a weight-bearing exercise.
All right, Nancy in Schenectady says, I'm an 84-year-old woman, used to be active, but recently my legs feel like rubber, very wobbly when I walk, lots of tingling, especially if I've been sitting. Tingling often starts in the foot, moves all the way up to the butt. Mm. What kind of doctor should I be contacting, or a physical therapist?
Yeah.
She asked the physical therapist.
Yes, the physical therapy. Those are things that often we can figure out based on some of the questioning. And if it's not a physical therapy thing, a physical therapist would refer to the appropriate. She can also start with her general practitioner, though. That's a safe place.
All right. Caroline writes, I've had two very bad arthritic knees that are currently bone on bone. I can no longer take long walks the way I used to. I'm in a lot of pain. I've been told I need knees. Okay. You know, listen, a lot of times you write these on the phone, you can't tell. I've been told I need a knee replacement, which I don't want to do. I had a hip replacement about 2 years ago. I don't want surgery again. I decided that swimming may help. What do you think?
Swimming pool exercises would help, but so would physical therapy and learning how to do strength exercises. There's a lot of stuff you can do that would reduce the pressure, so you can do them laying down to help build the strength in the hips, pelvis, and thigh muscles.
Yeah.
But the water would be a great place to do exercises for the knee. And the knee does typically very well with strengthening exercises, even if it's very arthritic.
All right, fair enough. Very quickly, we don't have time for the last call here. All right, so you'll be back, right?
Yes, sir.
If people want to find you on the web, Matthew Goodemote, how do they do that?
It's my name, Goodemote, and then the letters SP.com, Goodemote SP.
Can you spell Goodemote for
us? Oh, sure, GoodemoteSP.com.
Matthew Goodemote, have a wonderful New Year's with
you
the
too,
family,
Ray.
And we'll
Thank
see you.
You
next year.
Sounds good, thanks.
Support comes from Capital Region Classical at Union College, presenting pianist Emmanuel Axe in works of Beethoven, Schumann, and Corleano, Sunday, January 4th, 3 p.m., CapitalRegionClassical.org. Plaza Travel Center, presenting a small group trip from Albany to Patagonia and Argentina in October, escorted by Gene Gagnon. For trip details, gene@plazatravel.net. And Capital Roots, celebrating 50 years of helping make local food and green spaces accessible to all through mobile markets, community gardens, and programs, capitalroots.org. Once again, thanks to Matt Goodemote for being here today. Thank you for listening. Sorry if we didn't get to your email or your call today. We get a lot of them when this man is on the air, but he'll be back several times in 2026. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Jim Mountier, who screened the calls today, also braved the lousy driving. Thank you, Jim. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh my heavens, another weird year is behind us. Tomorrow's the last Vox Pop of 2025. We'll go out in fine fashion with the Science Forum. So think up a science question and call in. We'll see you too.